Welcome to MCBI's 60 Mark, a podcast for curious thinkers.
Bonjour, it's Marina from MCBI. I am here with Paolo Cardelli, who has joined us for the 60 Mock series. And I have been dying to use a bit of my accent repertoire, so thank you. Welcome, Paolo. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Thank you very much for having me.
No, good. No. So we're delighted to have you here today. And I know we met, a couple of weeks ago, thanks to a mutual friend, Anne, who introduced us by saying we're both crazy, crazy people and you guys should meet. And never, ever was a prediction so true.
It was quite an experience. Non-stop talking for 90 minutes and too many coffees.
No, it was good. Certainly as we got to know each other in our professional experience, I became intrigued and invited you to come along here and tell some of your stories. So we would normally start this session by saying, you know, Paolo, you're here, you've got down that dirty little alley down Featherstone. Tell us a bit about your career. But after spending that time with you, I reckon a better question is, can you tell us a bit about your story? Because I think that's going to cover a bit more.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
Give it a go.
But let's just give a nod first to Featherstone Place.
Yeah.
Because it ain't no alley. It's got a lot of style. There's something about it that's cosmopolitan and friendly and inviting. If you ignore the rubbish and you just focus on the vines and the lovely buildings, you have a lovely home here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We're all like smiling with our thumbs up going, yeah, just ignore the pigeons and the smokers and the druggies. And anyway, back to you, your story. Tell us about your story.
Well, I think if I was trying to explain who I am today, the same with most of us, it's probably directly related to the experiences that I've had in my life. And knowing that I was going to come and talk to you today, I thought to myself, well, you know, what are the most significant drivers that make me who I am today? And I think if I said a need to understand is probably what's driven me the most. And that need to understand has helped me to recognize that my audience or my customers or whoever I interact with in my life need to be understood. Then those two elements are what help me to be of service to others, whether it's family or clients or the wider public in a sense of giving service. So I thought about what were the most significant drivers of who I am. And the three experiences that made me who I am today was firstly my experience as a student in school, which wasn't a great experience from an academic point of view. My experience being a parent to two daughters, and also someone who's had to proactively manage a chronic disease, a chronic illness that certainly took over my life for a long period of time. So I think if I talked about those experiences and why they have made me who I am today, I think you'd probably end up with a good picture.
Tell us about what it was like to be a student.
I went to a school that a few years ago celebrated its 500th anniversary.
500?
And I think I was probably, academically, one of the poorest students they'd ever had. And I just didn't get it. I didn't understand what it was about. I didn't understand the way my teachers communicated to me. I didn't understand my subject matter. I didn't understand the task. I didn't know what to do. And so I guess I was probably I had an undiagnosed learning disorder. I don't know for sure. But I was basically informally diagnosed as just being a very lazy person.
Right.
And left to deal with that laziness. And I think I instinctively knew that I wasn't stupid and I wasn't lazy. I just couldn't get it. I did appallingly. And I think this is where the myth of ability or the myth of inability comes from. People who don't get maths straight away.
Oh.
when they're at school, they're put at the back of the class, they're immediately labelled as not being good at maths. Well, I think I didn't get maths until my 30s, for example. I was a very poor student all round, and maths was probably the ultimate example of how bad I was as a student. Although I did manage somehow to get a maths O level. And my brother, who was the year below me, was told me the story of how his maths teacher told the story of how even Paolo Cardelli, managed by using some kind of logic to pass his maths O level. So I knew there was a way.
Inspiring. You're inspiring people back then.
Yeah. Well, it didn't feel like that to me.
No.
And then so that went really badly. And then I was sent to a crammer in London, a very old-fashioned crammer. And I remember one of my tutors, his name was Hugh Lawson Tancret. Hello, Hugh. If you read some of the Penguin classics on the life of Aristotle, you'll be familiar with Hugh Lawson Tancret. And he was the kind of intellectual who I'd catch laughing as he was reading a book. And he'd say, oh, Paolo, you must look at this. It's so funny. And I'd look at it, and it was written in ancient Greek. So, but Hugh, I can't read this. I don't understand. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I'd forgotten, and then explained the joke to me. And I did appallingly at the crammer as well. And so I wasn't able to get into university. And in the end, I studied business at a college, and I did an advanced diploma in business and finance. But I think that was probably a very significant driver in my need to understand and also recognize the fact that just because you don't get things straight away, it doesn't mean you won't get them eventually. And how we communicate, how we structure our information is all about the rights of the audience. Mm. In my presentation skills workshops that I've given all over the world, I talk about two specific words right at the beginning, because people are expecting public speaking skills, pitching skills. But when I talk about audience and I talk about presentation or presenter, it could be one-on-one. Mm. It could be to two people. It could be to an auditorium full of people, because essentially that presentation takes place when one or more of us interact with one or more people with a structured communication of ideas, of beliefs, of facts or proposals in order to induce a state of mind or a course of action. And when we do this well, we do it well because we've thought about our audience. Mm. And whether you're a school student or someone trying to get the hang of uni or someone who doesn't understand their job, I've always believed that the fault lies with the person communicating. And so an audience member is one person or 100,000 people. And a presentation is me talking to you over a pint in the pub. If I have a specific result that I'm trying to get, I might want you to understand my point of view, or I might want you to react or behave in a certain way, then the most important thing I do is recognize your rights as my audience. You have the right to understand, to be engaged, to get the point, to know what happens next, all those sorts of things.
I think in Latin, now you probably better correct me here, but facile actually means to make things easier.
Yes, and being a lady with a French surname, you would know that that's also in French. Facile in French, facile in Italian. Yeah,
all from the Latin. It means to make it easier, isn't it?
The Latin stem.
Yeah. So it is about, you know, respecting the audience and making it easier for them to digest the information.
Hence what a true facilitator is.
Yeah,
they facilitate. They should make it. They should ease someone through the process of the penny dropping.
And
my happy moment, my light bulb moment in any situation is when I witness the penny drop.
Yeah.
There's an actor who I think you know called Peter Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me after a workshop that he attended, he told us that the penny would drop and it did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew I'd done the job.
Yeah, nice. So just changing gears, I mean, they're all great in business and great clients, but, you know, there's no handbook on how to raise kids. So the second thing you mentioned was, you know, something that changed you was being a father to two daughters. How has that changed you?
Well, I'm not much good at the sciences. But I know that there is a mechanism on a kettle, and it's called, or it used to be called in my day, a bimetallic strip. Two different kind of alloys. And so as it gets hotter, one heats and bends, but, or is pulled by the other, and it turns the kettle off and vice versa. I had that moment with the birth of my first daughter, Isabella. I wasn't looking forward to being a parent at all. And the moment she was born, and I talked about it widely. I told my colleagues, I was working at Citibank at the time. I told my colleagues, I'm dreading this. I just do not want to do this. I didn't. The modelling that I had in terms of parenting at the time wasn't, I wasn't fond of the idea of what kind of parent
becoming that person. Yeah. I guess that person he may have thought was a parent.
But 10 seconds after Isabella was born, I had forgotten that the bimetallic strip in my persona had just switched me over. Mm-hmm. And when people said, but Pally, you don't even like kids, I'd say, what on earth are you talking about? I've always loved children. I've always wanted to be a parent. This is the best thing in the whole world. And I suppose if we think about the challenges that I had understanding things and the fact that I fell in love with both of my children, both Isabella and Chloe, immediately. And I think it's a lifelong love affair. I'm absolutely with them every step of their way and always here for them. It's remembering how no one seemed to bother to try to understand how I was thinking in order to be able to better engage me and understand in return. So my kids, if they ever listen to this, will laugh when I use the expression, what would need to happen in order for you to achieve that? And so I started to engage my children in the way that I wished I'd been engaged.
Yeah.
And it's no criticism to anyone involved in my childhood or the teachers. There is a style that belongs to a particular generation, and that style can pigeonhole us for the rest of our lives. What I recognized is that we all benefit from that communication. And so it's really helped me to be a better parent, to allow my children to go their own way and to discover things for themselves, but also to recognize that, for instance, if you start uni and you go through uni and you decide to drop out right at the end, and then you start another course and you decide to drop out again, every time you decide that it's not for you is bringing you one step closer to finding the path that is right for you. And I want my children to know that, because sometimes you think something's right until you look into it. And eventually we find our groove, and it doesn't really matter how long it takes, as long as we're proactively going about seeking the end that we have in mind. It's a well-formed outcome for yourself, seeing yourself and what you do. And when I help people to set up small businesses, the first thing I say to them is, what's your goal? Have you thought about it? And your goal might be an exit strategy. It might be, well, to start with, how do I get out of this? And then you start having to think about yourself. Am I right? A kind of a me feasibility. Am I right for this? What's good and bad? What would I need to know in order to make me better? And then as you start putting a lean business plan together, and most people I deal with are bootstrapping, they don't have a lot of cash, then I start talking about revenue growth and positive cash flow and profit and asset value and
businessy stuff.
But what's interesting, though, is that why do small businesses fail? And most of the time, it's because they just don't have enough customers. Because we're back to the theme of seeking first to understand before being understood, in the words of Stephen Covey, I think. It's one of the habits of the 7 habits of highly effective people. You achieve those win-win outcomes, to use his language, by really understanding. And if you don't understand who your customer is, then it gets back to your earlier podcast that I was listening to about I think his name was Slim.
Yeah,
a barman, a professional barman from Hong Kong,
yeah.
Who was a rather unlikely and unsuspected mentor for you in terms of understanding what true customer service is all about.
Absolutely. Mm. So the last thing you just mentioned is we was this. You manage a pretty serious like illness or condition. Let's call it a condition because it would give you the benefits. Or
yeah, and I think approach is everything.
It
and
is,
understanding
isn't it?
The illness once
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
It's all about that. Yeah. I have something called polycystic kidney disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's congenital. And I'm sad to say that I've also passed it on to my youngest daughter, Chloe. And she will have a journey, perhaps not exactly the same journey as I have. There are wonderful things happening mm-hmm. in the world of medical science at the moment that would make your eyes pop open and mm-hmm. stars come out of your ears. it's such a magnificent world we live in. But a long story short, Marina, I, over a period of time, lost my kidney function and I ended up having both of my kidneys removed. So I spent a period of time with no kidneys at all, which is quite an interesting experience. Mm. The kidneys are quite important.
Yes.
They do a lot of filtering. Mm-hmm. You essentially get poisoned if you can't clean your blood.
Mm.
And your kidneys are filtering about half a cup of blood and cleaning it every minute.
Wow.
All day, 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year for your whole life.
Mm.
And I'm actually involved as a result of the illness that I'm in. And by the way, I had a transplant.
Mm.
You can't live with no kidneys for too long. And I was having very, very extensive periods of dialysis. It was a difficult period in my life that I have to try to drive through because, of course, there's the economic reality of having trying to support a family and work. And I was, trying to base myself in Adelaide for my children. And I was dialyzing for 6 hours and then getting on a plane and flying to London
mm.
and dialyzing, thank you, London Clinic in Harley Street mm-hmm. overnight and then doing a session the next day. It was exhausting. And my brother-in-law, Bruno, gave me one of his kidneys. Obviously...
Amazing.
Yeah, it can. Yeah. You can get very emotional, mm. and sometimes I allow myself to get emotional. But this is a guy who hates the sight of blood. Sight of blood. Can't stand needles.
Wow.
And passes out when he sees blood.
Yeah.
And he flew from the UK to Australia, and he basically said, "Cut me open, take out one of my kidneys, and give it to him. But don't give me any details. I don't want
him.
To know."
Yeah.
So he's an extraordinary human being,
yeah.
and I'm glad I've been able to mention him. And that's why I have this relationship with Kidney Health Australia.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do here is that I'm the chair of the National Consumer Council for Kidney yeah. Health Australia. I'm going to quote Winston Churchill, may I?
Sure, depends on what it is.
Well, he said, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give."
Yes, one of my favourite quotes.
And I quite like that. And Kidney Health Australia is about advocating for the well-being of people with chronic kidney disease. And so I chair a body that's made up of consumers.
Yeah.
And they're either people who have the disease or people who are caring for people with the disease or they're people who are in healthcare. And they're volunteering to try to get the message out there. And I would love to say a few things about kidney health if I had the chance to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, our challenge is to engage the demographic so that they are mobilized into a kidney army. There are some charities in Australia that do incredibly well, and they get an awful lot of funding. But it's interesting to know that although kidney disease isn't talked about a lot, it kills more Australians each year than breast or prostate cancer or even road traffic accidents put together.
Mm.
So we're dealing with about 1.7 million Australians who have chronic kidney disease or who may have it and many who don't realise they have it.
Mm.
And it's a little bit like if I said, so one of the ways that we can deal with it is to get on top of some of it really, really early or some of the markers that lead to kidney disease. And so if I said that a lot of people are walking around with high blood pressure, most Australians would say, yes, we know.
Mm.
But if that blood pressure was managed earlier, a huge chunk of those 1.7 million people would never get chronic kidney disease because two of the major causes are high blood pressure and diabetes. Mm-hmm. The reality is that it's a bit like if I was walking in 1920 and a young Adolf Hitler, who, let's say he was a teenager, I'm not doing my maths very well, he was older than that by then, and I thought, he looks like trouble, and I elbowed him off a cliff, and he disappeared. There'd be no heroics, because he would never live to become the person who caused all that grief and did all those terrible things. Mm-hmm. If you diagnose people with high blood pressure and they control it and live a more healthy life, they never get to the stage when they are saved from having kidney disease, and they're not aware of it. So it's a kind of hidden, invisible disease. And
there's a lot we need to do in that area. So I think it's amazing how you've taken all these like life journeys and these life experiences and then been able to transform it and turn it into something good.
Can I say one more thing shortly? If you're listening, get your blood pressure checked.
That will be the message. So as we leave our time together, Paolo, it's been, an extraordinary little tiny insight into a man who has not just travelled the world, we've changed lots of other people's lives. But most importantly, three quick questions before we finish up. You're an honorary Australian. Do you still say crisp or is it chips?
It's absolutely crisp.
Oh, what is
and
that?
I don't have a drop of English blood in me.
We honorary Australian. Favourite beverage?
Probably red wine.
Red wine. It's a big one. It's that we're in the best probably state in the world. And last one, out of all the days of the week, which one's your favourite?
Friday.
Fridays are great. Thank you so much, Paolo Cardelli, for your time today. And look forward to hanging out with you a bit more.
Thank you much, Marina Poulin.
Thanks for listening in today. We look forward to you joining us next time.